Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
All right, a lot of things on our plate here. Business days at the Capitol. Today we'll be talking an awful lot about property taxes. Will be first off the list here, but we're going to be speaking with Mandy Rambo a bit later on about tourism. Nancy Schlepp. It was a year ago when the Supreme Court allowed that permit and approved that, so the Black Butte Copper Mine is moving forward there. So Nancy will join us. Deborah Potter and Russell Rice, Ide Bailey, the One Big Beautiful Bill. There's a lot of things in there that you may not know about, that you should know about, that are going to save you money if you do know about them. So we're going to know about them more a bit later on than Adam Gilbertson will join us here as well. We're going to kick this off with Senate President Matt Regeer and Senate Minority Leader Pat Flowers today on Voices of Montana. A lot of things to get to. Not going to waste any time about it here outside of saying a big thank you for joining us here. Senate Minority Leader Pat Flowers has joined us. Pat, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Tom. How are you?
Good. It was kind of a little bit late. You know, the session, you guys have a great, and then let's welcome Senate President Matt Regeer as well. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, good morning, Tom. What a lineup you got here. I want to stick around and listen just to that lineup. That's dynamite.
I'll send you
topics.
The podcast.
Yeah,
okay?
There we go.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you guys for coming on. I appreciate that. You were just on stage. Pat, you were a little bit outnumbered there. Some of us thought that was fun. I'm not sure you did.
He's still smiling.
Yeah, no, it was fine.
Yeah.
I'm used to it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I appreciate it. Appreciate that. I want to start off with property taxes, all right? Because I heard an awful lot yesterday, and you guys talked about it. We've been talking about it forever. I'm going to get past where we're at and try to talk about, you know, what are the solutions to the incoming challenges we may have with that. But let's start off with Senate President Matt Regeer. I know this is how are you? Good to see you. we're in a little session break here too, so there'll be folks running around and it's okay, it's live radio, right? We can roll with it. Property taxes, just launching. What are some of the things that that you want to highlight for people to know from your standpoint?
Sure, we came into this session. I mean, it's been a growing concern here, as the speaker said here on stage. Like, this is a decades long problem. When what we have, 45, I think, different lumber mills throughout Montana back in the 90s, and now we're down to 5 or something. And when you take out one lumber mill, I mean, that's a huge cost to that community in property tax. I mean, they fund a lot of roads and schools, and now you're having to pass levies putting it on the residential property taxpayers because we're killing off our natural resource and the revenue that we get from that. I mean, the Keystone Pipeline that came through, that was a huge lost opportunity for property tax for those communities as well as the state. So that is to tee up the problem coming in, and that all gets dumped on the back of homeowners. So I get that. That's a burden, and it's something that the legislature needed to take on. We had a proposal that would have take somebody's going to lose with taxes, right? Somebody's going to pay with taxes, and somebody's going to benefit from the services. The state has been running surpluses for like 3 sessions now, and we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in the surpluses. We're sitting on billions in reserves. Notion that we had a bill, Senate Bill 90, that was going to take some of those resources, the revenues that were coming to the state, give it back as a tax credit year after year to just primary resident homeowners, which would have kept everybody else whole. All the ag, the commercial, second homes, none of that would have happened. It would have just helped out primary residents here in Montana. I thought something like that, it would have hurt the general fund, hurt, quote unquote, it would have taken money from the general fund, but that's less money coming to Helena, which I'm okay with. So we didn't do that. That bill didn't make it. It actually passed the Senate floor 50-0 on second reading. So it was a good idea. I think there's still legs for that coming up in the future, because we're going to have to do something. This shift that happened now is unsustainable.
Well, and I've heard people say that here at the conference yesterday as well, when they're looking at property taxes 2026 and 2027, especially second homes, but agriculture, the business discrepancy, they noted that quite well as to. Senator Flowers, I'll get your aspect on this, because as you said, you know, the bill that was passed helped 80% of the people. But I think we have to have a larger discussion about not property taxes, but taxes and our tax structure in general in Montana. But your thoughts on where we're at and where we need to go.
Yeah, Tom, in order to understand, I think, the property tax solution that we just passed in the last session, I think you also need to think about or know about what happened between the 22 and the 23 tax years. It was at that point that we saw a huge increase in the valuation of Montana properties. It was in part product of the pandemic and a lot of folks moving here and driving up prices. So in places like Bozeman, Missoula, other urban areas, we saw huge increases. That resulted in significant, sometimes doubling, of property tax in those locations. That is caused because the full effect of a property tax or property value increase is felt by residential owners. It's not fully felt because of the way the law is structured. It's not fully appreciated for large business holdings. And so what happened was a really significant shift of lowering taxes on large business and shifting that tax onto residential owners. And so what we attempted to do in this last session is to rebalance that, not entirely, but somewhat. And I'll give you a good example on the business end. One large business in the state, who I won't name, had their property tax bill between 22 and 23 go down by $31 million. And this year, as a result of the new tax law, it went up by 23. There's still money ahead, but it is closer to a better balance. And so we feel like what we've created is something more fair to homeowners than what we had prior. And it did benefit, as you said, Tom, we're estimating at least 80% of Montana homeowners.
I appreciate that. And again, there's some information to share here, but there's so much on the plate to talk about. I want to move past property taxes and even the tax structure. That's a discussion that we have to have in more than just 5 minutes. Let's talk about energy, because that's something I'm always concerned about. And I've always said the math does not add up. And Montana has an opportunity because we can be an energy-rich provider, so to speak. And I want to save a question, some time here for Melissa as well. She's got a question for you. So give me a couple of minutes on energy, Senator Regeer.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it is a math problem, like you said. It's. I was just at a conference with Idaho National Labs that does nuclear energy, and I think that's the future of this. And they were talking in 1950, the U.S. used 329 terawatts of energy, and we're expected now in 2030 to be at 6,500. So it's just a math problem of where you're getting all the megawatts. A nuclear reaction is releases a million times more energy than a chemical reaction. So I think the only way mathematically that the United States as well as Montana is going to get there is nuclear. And it's amazing the safety precautions that they have now and the technology that is in nuclear. I think that is the future to make that math problem work.
As everybody looks at this, that's one of the solutions that's coming to the top. Senator Flowers, your thoughts on energy. I know your party's big behind renewables. I think there's still more to gain there, but sustainability, there's still questions about that.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, I think, let me talk initially that I think we need some kind of a comprehensive vision of what, for this state, of what our energy future looks like.
The country needs a comprehensive vision.
Country needs that. Certainly Montana needs that. So we're not just knee-jerk reacting to proposals as they come along. I'm hoping that we can create some kind of an energy authority, and out of that will come a comprehensive energy plan for the state. So as we look ahead, we can evaluate any proposal based on that plan that we've all agreed to. Beyond that, I think right now renewables provide some of the cheapest energy, and it's been a big shift in the last 20 years, and I think we need to continue to take advantage of that. And for the foreseeable future, I also think it's probably going to be, as the governor likes to describe it, an all-the-above kind of energy approach that we're going to have to tap into oil and gas, natural gas, coal, and possibly nuclear if that is, you know, becomes economically practical. Right now that's questionable whether it is. And certainly renewables and storage related to renewables should be a big focus of our energy future.
Got a lot of work to do on it, I think. Yeah. And we cannot fall behind because these data centers and AI, it's just critical that we stay in front or at least on top of it, whether it's in front or not.
It is turning into a national security issue, too.
Yeah.
Energy, yeah, with AI. Yep.
Yeah,
on that front, too, Tom, in terms of those data centers, one of the things I think is incredibly important is that as those develop in this state, and it does represent a big economic opportunity for the state, we can't put the burden of those data centers on ratepayers. Our energy costs can't go up because of these data centers. And I know there's a lot of discussion about them kind of self-generating the power they need. I think that's the direction it has to go. But we need to create a firewall between ratepayers, you and I who are paying our energy bills, and those data centers.
I think everybody would agree on that in a lot of ways. Melissa Lewis, didn't get a chance to ask the question there in the eggs and issues breakfast, but you've got one here now. So go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I'm curious from Senator Flowers and Senate President Matt Regeer, looking at 2027 and the upcoming legislative session, is there any appetite in Montana to establish a Montana business court following states like Texas, Delaware, Wyoming, New York? These business courts really have jurisdiction over commercial disputes, specialized judges with expertise to handle these complex cases for expedited resolution. Any appetite in Montana?
Yes, for sure. And there was Senator Tom McGilvery out of Billings had a bill this session that we're working on that would have done that, a constitutional court as well as a business court. And that is, once you dig into and start looking at, unfortunately, like business lawsuits and everything, that slows down business here in Montana. And you get a neglect and case that, you know, child welfare, they bumped always right to the top, and then business just keeps getting pushed down. So it can be years before you get justice in a business sense. So that very much, and there's other states that have done it, but Wyoming and Utah, and it just creates a much better business environment for your state when you have a specialty court like you're talking about there, Melissa, that just functions for that.
Thoughts on that, Senator Flowers?
I think there's an opportunity there. I think the question, and we debated this in the last session too, is whether the juice is worth the squeeze. How much is it going to cost to create these courts? Is it going to create enough efficiency to make it worthwhile? And I think that's the frame that we need to continue to apply when we consider this in the future.
I like that, juice worth the squeeze. You know, I think that's something that every legislator needs to have on the top of their minds, I guess, every piece of legislation. I appreciate so much what you guys do, and I know it's a difficult challenge, and I think it's sometimes a thankless job, so I want to thank you both very much for representing your party, your constituents, and your ideals in the Montana legislature.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it very
much. Thanks for giving us this opportunity, Tom.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
From the Black Butte and Copper Mine, standing by. We are moving along here live from Capitol, Business Days at the Capitol here on Voices of Montana. Next up from the Department of Commerce, Deputy Director Mandy Ramble. Hi, Mandy.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good to see you.
You too.
It's been a little while, so it's good to connect with you, and that's what happens here. I only have a few minutes. You're leading a panel here in just a little while, by the way, break a leg, Tourism Contribution to Montana's Economy. What do you want this crowd to hear about?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would say is for a lot of years, tourism has been looked at as outside of the business realm. And I think it's really important to say that tourism business is business, and tourism is an economy driver in the state of Montana. And that's what I'd really want the business community to understand, is how tourism and other industries play really well together, and how our economy would be hurt if we didn't have our tourism in the industry. 1 in 12 Montanans' jobs are tied to the tourism industry in this state, and whether you like that or not, that is a fact that drives our economy, our income tax, our ability to have jobs for Montanans. And so I think that we have to recognize that it is an economy driver, and it is a large facet of our business, I guess, of the business nature in Montana as well.
How do we, in a balanced way, move our tourism economy along?
Yeah, I think that we look for ways to disperse tourists. So I think if you talk to folks in Yellowstone and Glacier area Montana citizens, they might say they feel over-visited or that they've been found out. But we have beautiful areas across the state of Montana. Mokoshika State Park in eastern Montana.
I got married there.
Oh, that's amazing.
There you are.
I'm from the High Line, so Wapkachugnan, Buffalo Jump, or Haver Beneath the Streets, I think are some hidden gems that even Montanans themselves are not aware that we have in our state. So how do we help rural and undervisited Montana realize the benefits of a higher tourism growth in their area, while recognizing that we need to give some relief to our national park areas who do feel like they are maybe being over-visited.
Address what businesses are talking about here and constituents as well. In the tourism industry, strong, vital, but is it paying for itself? Does it pay for our streets and roads and the usage? And there's a big discussion about how we get more out of our tourism economy.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I'll just be blunt that I don't know that I have the answer
right,
to that.
Yeah.
But there is an option for communities who are feeling over-visited or overrun with tourists for a local option, either resort area or resort community tax, that then they determine at the municipality level, at the local level, how they utilize those funds. And so I think that that is an option that maybe could be utilized outside of a statewide fix that might hurt some of those rural or undervisited areas who right now are realizing the benefits of the grant and loan programs that we have utilizing the bed tax dollars.
We catch up, this will be our last question here, anything you want to offer, but we catch up almost yearly at the Made in Montana show.
Yes.
As well, and that is so fun, and there's so many good entrepreneurs there in Montana stories. You know, talk about the value of that. Talk about the value of Made in Montana from the Commerce Department's perspective.
Yeah, I think our Made in Montana program, I mean, honestly, that event is one of my favorite events of the entire year, the trade show. Our Made in Montana program allows Montanans to bring great business ideas that they have to a realization and move forward with the business that they would like to and stay in Montana. You know, I found great businesses from that trade show. One that I use all the time, it's called Maiden, like a maiden voyage. Maiden Montana Pet Treats. My dogs go crazy for that. I think that it's just really great to see the entrepreneurial spirit of Montanans at that trade show.
Mandy, good to see you. Thank
good to
you
see
for
you
that.
Too. Yeah. Thank you so much, Tom.
Yeah. That's Mandy Rambo once again, the Deputy Director of the Montana Department of Commerce. Again, here on tourism. I'm going to call Nancy Schlepp over here. Got to have a chance to catch up with Nancy yesterday. She is the outgoing president of the Montana Chamber of Commerce, or I guess more specifically, she's going to be the a new past president of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. Let me get that. Get you there. You got it. I'm sorry. Yeah, put it on. We are switching right here in the middle of a little break here. It's kind of fun. There's all kinds of activity and noise around. Have you got me? Can you?
I hope so.
Okay, good.
Great.
Good to see you, Nancy.
Good to see you this morning, Tom.
Yeah.
Good morning, Montana.
Good morning, right? Yeah. The I saw you yesterday, and I was so excited to see you and chat with you because I just did one of the top stories, I think, for last year. It goes back to a year ago when the Montana Supreme Court approved the permit, the final discharge permit, for the Black Butte Copper Mine. I mean, and that got the final ball rolling, so to speak. So in that year's time, congratulations on that.
Thank
but
you.
But now you got to put pedal to the metal, right?
Absolutely, and that's what we're doing. You know, it's a little bit frustrating for the public because a lot of what we're doing right now is behind the scenes, but we had to start with a pre-feasibility study, which is all the work showing that this is going to be profitable, that for a publicly traded company, and now we're going to go into a full feasibility study, which all of this work will feed into the plan that can be a bankable feasibility study to be able to finance the building of the mine. So best case scenario for us right now would be building in 2027, which is what we've been saying for a while. And it's exciting. It's exciting to be this far in the process with a great project and good investors. So it's just a slow process.
Well, and we've talked about that too, you know.
Yes.
And there's not much you can do about it. I mean, there are probably some avenues for fast-tracking some types of permits and things like that. But to get all the dots, you know, I's dotted and T's crossed, it is a long process. How do you guys How do you guys plan for that long process?
You know, it takes a village. It really does. I can't tell you how many studies are done by third-party consultants to verify everything. And you want the best in every single area. So we're using technical consultants that know how to build mine tunnels. We're using different ones to know how to protect the environment. We have so many great consultants right here in Montana. All of our water studies are done by a company called Hydrometrics. It's right outside of out of Helena. That's nice. Their headquarters. And Tetra Tech and Morrison Merrily and Bison Engineering. All of these great folks that are professionals in Montana have a voice in this, as well as some industry folks nationwide and some worldwide. So using the best in every area that we can.
When you started this project, the price of copper and other critical minerals not where it is today, and the value that we understand of those critical minerals have really risen in stature. You know, what are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on, you know, starting this mine many, many years ago, but now as it comes to fruition here, we're finding how critical this mining is going to be.
Yes, and one of the things we're super excited about is that copper was named the critical minerals list this last year at the national level, which is super important.
What does that do?
What that does is it really gives a path forward for the federal government to be supportive of a project. And that's not huge for us right now because we are on completely private property. But I do think there's an opportunity that we may want to look at something bigger in the future. And we also have a lot of work that's being done on our cobalt being looked at by the Army Research Lab if there's a way to economically recover that. Right now, we don't know if there is. So that's happening as well. Copper prices are amazing. I was just looking up today. It's $5.87, which is amazing, really amazing. And
that's probably three or four times what it was years ago.
It
right?
really is.
Yeah.
And so that will also affect our model because some pricing around that, you want an average price, but obviously it's going up. Some of the economic reports I've read in the last year say that we'll have to mine as much copper in the next 80 years as we have in the last 5,000 if we want to go down this road of conservation and renewable. And a lot of that is going to be, you know, every windmill you see has 4 tons of copper in it.
Yeah.
Every electric car has 5 or 6 times. And then you also have worldwide third world countries coming up. And the first thing you want is, I'm sure I've said on this show before, is you want refrigeration. And that means electrical wires. So the world is changing. The standard of living for everyone is increasing, which I think we want. And that's a good thing.
I've got about a minute left, a little more than that. Share what this past year has been like for you as the president of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. I know, because I've been around, it's a busy, busy job.
Absolutely. And so my role was chair of the Chamber Board of Directors, and it was a two-year position. And I just can't tell you how rewarding it was to see the great things that the business community is doing in the state of Montana, and how the Chamber really steps up and is the lead on every issue that's important to our business community. So if you don't belong and need a membership, please look at joining the Montana Chamber of Commerce. It truly is the voice of business in Montana.
I've got a few more seconds. Does your mine, it stands out, I think, as a state of the art. Are other people looking at that as a model now?
Absolutely. You know, before this, I think Sibanye-Stillwater has been a great model. There's a mine in Michigan called the Eagle Mine that was a great model. Ours will be the next great model. I think we'll get visitors worldwide to see what is next in the world of mining and how to do it to the next level.
It's good to see you, and I'm glad you're well.
Good to see you,
Tom.
You
know, the family's good, too.
Thank you. Always love visiting with you. Thanks, yep. And have a happy new year and great 2026.
Yeah, we'll be running into each other, I know, as well. We'll be talking more, too. Anything you've got going on at the mine, let us know.
I absolutely will.
Yeah, we're all in on it, yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Nancy Schlepp, again, the former chair of the Chamber of Commerce. Okay, because Todd wouldn't like me saying that you're the president of the place. No, he wouldn't like that. Live from Business Days at the Capitol here, talking about Montana's economic priorities, the legislative priorities as well, sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce. And welcome back here from Montana for Montana's Voices of Montana. Appreciate Matt Regeer and Pat Flowers, Mandy Rambo, Nancy Schlepp. That was sort of a busy time with, right now it's Corey Swanson, Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court, who's doing a little keynote address here as well. I tried to get him on earlier, but he was saying, I'm going to be kind of busy. Like to be in there for that. But we are just pleased to welcome Deborah Potter and Russell Rice from Eide Bailly, as there's so much in this one big bill, one big beautiful bill that's going to relate, I think, tax-wise to the individual and also to businesses. And I saw your seminar there yesterday. Lots of good stuff. Good morning, Russell. How are you?
Good. How are you, Tom? Appreciate the invitation.
Thanks for coming in here, too. And also Deborah Potter. Good morning.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having us.
Where do you guys want to start?
We'll just jump right in. Yeah. For folks that might not remember, the One Big Beautiful Bill was passed on July 4th of 25, and it really extends the Tax and Reform Act that was passed originally by Trump back in 2017. So there's some business, kind of three big business items that impact folks, and then there's some several individual ones too. So, you know, just jumping right into the three key provisions for businesses, you know, the first one is research and development costs. Keeping a pretty high level, just wanting to let folks know out there that if you previously had some limitations on your research and development costs, that those should be freed up now. So make sure and touch base with your tax advisor. If you had any of those limitations in a prior year, you should be able to free some up of those prior costs and be able to expense current year costs.
Russell, what stands out for you for people to know about this One Big Beautiful Bill?
Yeah, I think it's very taxpayer friendly. I think it's also very business friendly as well, as Debbie mentioned there, with the research and development cost. Some of the limitations on deductibility of interest expense have also been cleared up. And then probably the one that we see that many businesses are able to take advantage of the most is the permanent passing of the 100% bonus depreciation, which allows you to write off a lot of your equipment, whether that's tractors, combines, vehicles, but also, you know, for other, if it's a backhoe, those types of things. But a lot of your equipment that you purchase that you need to utilize to, run your business and grow your business under this provision, under 100%, what we call an accelerated depreciation or bonus depreciation, you can really write that off and really recapture the entire cost in the first year.
And so, I think every small business appreciates that, and that the fact that that has risen, that write-off has risen, because that helps them invest.
Yeah, definitely. Over the last few years, it was 100% for a few years, then it's kind of was ratcheting down to 80% and 60%. But with the passage of this One Big Beautiful Bill, it's now, well, permanent, as permanent as tax law is until the next change, right?
That's one of my questions.
Exactly.
But as of right now, it is permanent with 100%. So that's a big boom for a lot of small businesses that are able to really recapture that cost immediately.
Deborah, what's in there for the average taxpayer?
Tax rates were set to go up for individuals, and those are now stable. So the highest tax rate is at 37%, and that's where it was going into this bill. So no change to tax rates, so that's a positive. I would also, with that, standard deductions go up.
Yeah.
So there's an increased standard deduction, which, you know, a lot of taxpayers have been taking in these previous years. Just as they've increased it, a lot less have itemized. So as that continues to go up, it'll allow people to have a much larger deduction on their individual tax return.
Is it complicated?
It depends, is our favorite tax answer. But, of course, we think things are complicated, but some things are pretty simple, which are super helpful. You get into some of these other complicated code sections, 199A and all these other things. They've managed to make it pretty complicated for us. But standard deduction sure helps keep it simple for folks, where you don't have to track a lot of items, and does make your tax preparation a lot simpler.
Anything else in here, Russell, that you'd like to talk about in the One Big Beautiful Bill?
Yeah, one other thing that a lot of folks really have liked and there's additional $6,000 deduction for those over 65 and older. And so that's an additional freebie in addition to that increased standard deduction. that is really able to provide tax relief for a lot of folks. That's actually both at the federal level, and then also Montana's also going to allow that. Montana already had a 65 and older deduction built into the tax changes that happened a couple of years ago, but they're actually going to allow you to have a second one. So you, very, very few times in tax law you're allowed to double dip, and it seems like this is one opportunity that you're allowed to double dip for those folks that are 65 and older. There is an income limitation that happens in there, so not everyone may get it depending on where your income is, but a lot of folks that that may need it are really going to be able to benefit from that.
Does the bill have any expirations, or is there anything in here that that's kind of hidden?
You know, there's a lot of hidden things in here and a lot of different effective dates that kind of came in. I would say the one bigger item that seemed to catch everyone by surprise, including us, was the charitable deduction. There's a new floor that comes into place in 2026, so it's going to reduce your ability to maybe take all the charitable deductions that you have put forth. It's and that also then at that higher tax rate, if you're at a 37% tax rate, you'll only be able to take 35% of your charitable deduction. So I would say keep an eye on that because that's in effect in 26 and definitely caught a lot of us off guard.
Deborah Potter again from Ide Bailey. Russell Rice is with us as well. I'm going to ask more of a generic question, esoteric, about the tax structure. And it seems like we have building blocks and we're building and building, but some of this stumbles over here and some of this falls off over there. Do you like our tax structure? Do you think we can simplify it or should simplify it? Are there countries that have found a better way that we just haven't tapped into yet, Russ?
Yes, I mean, I'm sure there is. I'm not familiar with all other countries' tax structure, but yeah, I mean, we do have a very complex structure, but they have gone, made some strides in the last couple of tax bills to really, I think, make it a little bit easier for folks. Debbie mentioned the increased standard deduction. Those types of things, I think, really help simplify it for a lot of folks that may not reach that itemized deduction limitation. I mean, now with the increased standard deduction, if you're 65 and older, you know, you're almost $50,000 of your income is shielded through those two deductions alone. And so that there is a big deduction and a tax savings for many folks. And so, I mean, obviously from a tax perspective, simplification is always nice.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about how, you know, many of these provisions are passed by Congress, but then it takes the IRS sometimes years in order to actually develop the rules that are surrounding them. So it puts us as tax professionals in limbo in a lot of cases. We're not quite sure, but yeah, I mean, I think we'd always would support simplification and making it a little bit easier and maybe a little bit more straightforward for folks.
Debbie,
separate from federal, Tom, you know, Montana did go through a tax simplification process. So our state, at least alone, has gone through a simplification process and made it a lot easier for our local taxpayers. And for Montana, they're also going through the process of lowering our state tax rate. So it's currently 5.9, and starting in 26, it'll go down to 5.65, and in 27, I believe 5.4.
What should people who are getting ready to fill out their taxes, what should they know? What should they not miss that they might miss?
Well, I think the biggest one right now, honestly, is going to be electronic payments. The IRS changed where they're requiring taxpayers to pay electronically.
Oh.
They can no longer write that hard copy check and send it in certified mail like they used to. And that went into effect at the end of September. So, and that's for any payments that are due. So Q1, first quarter for 20, or Q4 for 25 is coming up here on January 15th. So that should be paid electronically. And then any payments going forward for both payments due and refunds are required to be electronic.
I'm glad to hear that, because I sent the IRS a check recently. And they sent me a letter back going, "What's this check for?" You know, mm-hmm. Well, it's because you sent me a letter saying I made a mistake here.
Yeah, I can get frustrated in the time of processing those checks and opening the mail is getting longer and longer. So I think in the long run, although it may be a pain point for a lot of folks, you know, in the short term, I think in the long run it'll be a beneficial and increase efficiency and application of payments, and hopefully, reduce the misapplication of things that then take a lot of time to fix and correct.
Super. I appreciate this. I mean, there's so much information. You just download it. People, I mean, where can they go? Is there a place to go to find out some of the stuff? iBailey, perhaps, or your websites?
Yep. You can always go to iBailey.com, and we have some reports and just information out there that allows people to read. You can also reach out.
Regular people?
Regular people.
Oh, okay,
yeah, regular people.
They, not that you guys aren't regular people.
Oh, we know we're special, Todd.
There you go, yeah.
Or either just reach out to Russell and I directly. You can find us on the iBailey website. Debbie Potter, Russell Rice. We are out of our Billings, Montana office, so feel free to reach out.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. No. Glad to be here.
Yep. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Good stuff. Adam Gilbertson would have a lot of good things to say about it as well. He's a member of the Montana Chamber Leadership Board, I believe, and then also RDO Equipment. And we're talking about workforce development because you're leading a panel here that, well, I'll have you talk about that too. Ed Buttry and Tracy German and Elizabeth Feary. What do people need to know about what's happening in workforce development?
Yeah, you know, the last 4 years I've had the opportunity to serve on the governor's Workforce Innovation Board, and in July became the chair of that board.
Congrats, I think.
Or condolences, depending. Right. But in August, he put out an executive order announcing a 406 jobs initiative and gave us a whole bunch of work to do.
he's like that.
It's a great framework. And 406, obviously, is our area code, but four pathways to work. So we've got college, careers and trades, military and entrepreneurship, zero barriers to employment, really working on how do we prepare future team members, how do we engage the employers, how do we build a system for the state that's responsive, and then six high-demand sectors that are in the next decade going to be really, really important. Construction trades is one of those, so pretty near and dear to me. Health, careers, education and childcare, advanced manufacturing and computing, recreation and hospitality, and professional and financial services are those sectors. And the unique thing about what the governor has done is he's asked the agencies, his agencies, he's asked the education system, and he's asked industry to come together and start to break the barriers down and work together to help young people find careers in the state.
I appreciate that. It's not just getting that lower unemployment rate down. That's not what workforce development is. It's getting the qualified workforce for the businesses. So, and maybe you can address that, too, as being a member of the Chamber of Commerce and in the industry itself. Businesses have had a rough time expanding when they can, when they have capital to do it, because they don't have the workforce.
Right. And, you know, our state and the country in general does a pretty good job, but we know how to create lawyers and doctors and accountants. We're really good at those things, right? And our systems are set up. We've got a pathway. All these other jobs that are a little less defined, how do we get young people aware? How do we help build the initial traits so that when they put their resume in that first time, an employer can say, you know what, I'm going to give them a shot. And I think that's really what that foundational framework we're working on right now.
Where does Montana, I mean, I think when you talk about the opportunities that we have here and the zero barriers and the high demand, I think there's going to be a lot of high demand job openings in the state of Montana. What's your thought on that? Where is Montana going?
Yeah, I think, you know, the ones we're focused on right now are the ones that are constraining the growth, if you will. It doesn't mean they're more important industries by any stretch, but it is how do we focus on these and build industry partnerships in these industries so that we can work together to create that pathway. And then hopefully we model it out with these six and continue to build it in others.
Nice. I spoke with Rayleigh Honeycutt the other day, just yesterday as a matter of fact, with the Montana Stock Growers Association, and she was excited about workforce development from that ag standpoint. And I got I got less than a minute to answer this one. But, you know, we think of ranchers as they're ranchers. But, no, they are ranchers and men and women running businesses.
You bet they are.
Yeah. How do we help them?
You know, I think we've got to figure out ways to connect young people to those careers and then pull in partners. One of the big challenges around workforce is you come in as an individual company and you need one or two people. It's not really a sustainable program, but if you can bring together an industry sector, work together, create a sizable enough scale, and then partner with the education system, you can start to move the ball.
Break about RDO for 30 seconds here and other stuff you do.
23 years with RDO. It's been a great place. We're your local John Deere dealer, mostly construction in Montana, although we do ag on the western side of the state. And I live in Laurel, and it's just a great place working with the folks that build and grow our food.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good place to be.
It is, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, you can at the end of the day, you feel good when you got something done, right?
Amen.
Adam, thank you for coming in. I appreciate it. And all the work that you do. I mean, you've been doing this for some time now, too.
Indeed.
Keep pumping away, okay?
I appreciate that, Tom.
Adam
thank
Gilbertson
you.
Once again.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.